wonderfuls. Welcome to episode 348 of the podcast with my wonderful guest, Sarah Ennie. Sarah is an author, podcaster, and journalist. Her debut young adult novel, Tell Me Everything, is out now. She's also been featured in the New York Times bestselling villain anthology, Because You Love to Hate Me. And she also created and hosts the First Draft podcast, where she talks shop with other storytellers. I was pointed out to me recently by a longtime listener that sometimes I just don't, in fact, most of the time, I don't tell you much about the guest in the intro, which, shame on me. So I'm trying to make a concerted effort to be a little more aware of that, not make assumptions that you did, you know, any sort of homework, which you're certainly not required to do before you start listening, and pay the our guests the respect they're due by making sure to get things started with who they are, rather than letting that tie up at the end, which is typically what happens on the podcast. So please enjoy this episode. She's marvelous. I feel sure you will. And I hope everyone's doing wonderfully. We're going to see how I do. We're going to see if I, how I much lounging, if how much.
If you it's, need to creatively lay down, just let me know.
If my voice takes like a weird pitch, you're not getting, don't give me away.
Okay, great.
You'll just
great,
be like, so she's fully upside down now. I mean, have you ever hung in like gravity boots?
I haven't done it, but my friend's ex-husband's dad, had one of those things in his basement. And she was like, every Thanksgiving, she'd be like, I can't wait to go hang upside down in the basement for a while. And like, he had it for his back injuries, yeah, and it would just realign his spine. And I was like, that sounds really fun.
I think, I don't want to misspeak, but I'm pretty sure Mike Furman, my friend Mike Furman, has gravity boots, or used to. Mm. And that sounded kind of cool to me until I had to shoot something where we were doing the like, it's like the scarf thing where you can you wrap yourself in
Aerial silks.
Aerial silks.
Yeah, yeah. Also, I'm gonna take my shoes off. Is that cool?
I wish you would.
Okay, great.
I mean, that sounds like I'm angry with you. But anyway, hanging upside down. I mean, the amount of blood that fills to your head so quickly. I was like, this is not right. This is not right. I wanted to be like, how fun. Because you remember when you were a kid and you go on monkey bars and stuff. Right. I don't remember being like, I feel really weird about this.
But I think it's also, you're like, it's fun for 2 minutes.
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh no, humans are definitely not meant to. And then maybe vampires are even creepier to you.
Absolutely. I don't know how they do it. I guess I don't really know what's running through their veins anyway. If there's anything to rush to the head.
I wish they'd write a book. I want to know.
All the you know who should write that is Mary Roach, who wrote like the science of space and like the science of poop and the science of like fake ghosts and hauntings and stuff.
Dude, that would be
amazing. She could definitely do this sort of like, let's assume vampires are real. Let me break this down.
Yeah. I'm so happy you're reminding me of her too. I'm like, oh yeah, I've been meaning to read those books.
Oh, she's great. She did an episode of the podcast and I really was like a little bit fangirly because she's so cool. And she had me come to her house in Oakland. And the whole
Oh, I didn't know she lived in Oakland.
Yeah.
That's where my brother lives.
Hopefully everyone already knew that. What if she's like, everyone thinks I live in Virginia. What are you doing?
This is
important. Don't.
You know, authors are like, I live in a cabin in the woods.
Yeah.
At an undisclosed location.
Well, did you ever read Stephen King books, speaking of vampires?
Yeah, for sure.
Do you remember the book? I can't remember what book it was, but didn't he like, someone like showed up to his house?
Well,
that happened in a This American Life episode too, with a different like Piers Anthony or some other guy.
Whoa.
But I feel like Stephen King, because he does so much autobiographical, like at the end of his books, like Tabitha and I were da da da.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure someone showed up to his house too and was like, "Help me, Stephen King! I'm a lost child."
But also, have you? Okay, this is so interesting. We're talking about his house because just recently he decided to donate his house in Maine to be a like an author retreat space.
That's so cool.
Yeah, and it's going to be his like living library. It's such a cool concept. But also then you see pictures of it. And I've actually seen it before because my friend lives down the street from him, which
amazing.
Is really
funny. I love where this conversation has already taken us to so many like, wait, what?
Yeah, my friend used to know. But anyway, when you live in Maine, you're just basically, you know, everyone.
Mm-hmm.
But his house looks like Stephen King's house.
Yeah.
Like if you went across the whole Eastern Seaboard and saw every single house, you'd be like, well, that one is it.
So really? Is it really like a Victorian or is it like
super old Victorian? Yeah. It's got like bats and wrought iron bats on the, I mean, it just looks like, it's like when you see the Osborne house and you're like, oh yeah, it's the Osborne house.
Right, right,
you're
right.
Not trying to fade in.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's what Rob and Sherry Zombie used to have, a house in Hancock Park that was like that. Like I pulled up and I didn't know them at all at the time. Mm-hmm. Nor was I a fan of the music. It just wasn't part of my world. And yeah. I definitely was like, I wonder how much of it becomes like, I don't want to say marketing because that sounds like it's fake, but but that this a fulfillment of the expectation for a lifestyle.
Yeah. How much pressure does he feel to be like, you can't pull up to Rob Zombie's house and it's like a mid-century rambler.
Yeah. Cut to, then they ended up getting a lake house in New Hampshire and it's just like a beautiful country house.
Well, there you go.
And I hope they don't mind my saying this, it was many years ago, but they were like, this is so much more us. It's like, well, there you go.
You know what, I haven't thought about him in a minute and that makes me happy. I'm happy that Rob Zombie's chilling somewhere.
Oh, he's so great. I wish I still saw them all the time. Yeah, he's really great. Okay, so I don't remember where we got to the Hanging Upside Down.
Don't remember
Stephen
at all.
King, can't talk about Mary Mary Roach
that
lives.
You might need to lay down while we chat.
I might need to lay down. Boy, we really rewind it all the way back. There was like a sliver in between that I was trying to think of. But yeah, I guess it is the sort of like that transition from when you were a kid and you do things that don't make your stomach flip, that, you know, all of those things that my body at some point without telling me was happening,
were
like, guess what? You don't like swings anymore.
Yeah. What's it recently? Or I mean, anyway, getting older is this whole thing where you're like, oh, like the first day that you voluntarily order a salad and you're like, oh, I'm betraying like my whole life up until this point. When you're like, I actually like, I need fiber, you know?
Yeah.
Like I want to feel good. It's not about being like, I'm going to eat chocolate cake for breakfast. You're like, I don't even want to do that anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's been a lot of that lately. And most particularly, jet lag and stuff for me has started to become, I used to be a really great traveler and now I'm like, oof, it's rough.
Yeah. Do you have a, have you figured out, has it happened recently enough, but also have you had enough time to kind of try to figure out a new approach?
I'm working on a new approach. It's like in the middle of happening. My good friend was having to go back and forth to China for about a year. And so she was just telling me like sunshine. Yeah. When you get to where you're at, like go outside, walk, you know, just be outside as much as you possibly can and that'll help. And I was able to do that coming back to LA this time and I was like, oh, and then I adjusted pretty fast. But
and where were we coming from?
I was in Morocco.
Oh wow.
Yeah,
great. How was it?
Family vacation. It was super fun.
Had you been there before?
No, first time.
I've never been.
It was great.
It was.
Yes. Whenever you go, let me know.
What was the when you were in like a main hub, I would imagine.
Yeah, we started in Casablanca, we went to Fez, and then we went to Marrakesh, and we drove. We had like, this is like a mom's bucket list trip type of thing, so it was like a little bougie, so I'm telling you how to drive. Like, we had a driver and a guide, but like, that isn't typically how I move through the world, but we were able to be driven throughout the countryside, and so we saw, and by the way, it's so like L.A., and California generally, like driving in the countryside, I was like, oh, this is like the 101 or whatever.
Oh, wow. Nice. Was that the first time you had been to cities where there would be like a call to prayer?
Yes.
I've never been to a city where that happens. I hear it's just eerie and beautiful.
Okay, at first I thought it was a race car. My family gave me so much crap because I was like, what is that noise? Is there like a race car? Is there like a track around here? And they were like, you moron. Like... Hello.
It's the next closest thing.
Yeah,
no,
not at
opposite.
All.
Opposite.
I don't know what was going on with my ears that day, but no, it was absolutely gorgeous. And it was a really like, my mom ended up, I think, responding to it the most because she was like, I really just like having a moment. It makes you stop what you're doing and not only recognize that time has passed, but it's a moment of reflection, right? So, yeah, maybe I should get something in her house that just like, dings at a certain time or something.
It's a
like
race
that.
Car sound. The honk of a horn. How calming.
That would be actually the best Christmas present to be like, F all you guys. I refuse to I do this thing with my family. I don't know if you do this, but I won't back down. I'll be proven wrong and I'm like, oh well that's great. You guys can believe that. That's fine. But I'm like, and mostly it's to make myself laugh, but I'm also like I'm sure they find it so obnoxious.
So give me another example besides the like I was right it was a race car.
I think we have disagreements about like quotes in movies. So we'll watch them and I'll be like, oh, that's so funny that you altered this to be like this other quote.
That's so, like, that is so something my dad and I do. 1,000%. Yeah.
Yeah. It is like, a very dad thing.
I guess this must be the director's cut. Yeah. I understand they shot some scenes differently.
Oh, that was reshoots for sure.
Yeah. That's amazing. But they're good. They like it too. It makes them laugh as well.
I mean, I am always trying to find, I guess it is very dad-like. It's like, I'm always trying to give them ways to like give me shit.
Yeah. How many people are in your family? Your parents are still together?
My dad actually passed away about 10 years ago. Yeah. It was really sudden. I was 23, but my parents were together then. Still very much in love. And it's just me and my younger brother.
Okay.
But the trip was also with his fiance, and they're going to get married in April. Oh, so it was kind of like, let's all go see if we can stand each other for 30 days.
No pressure, fiance.
Exactly. We all came back.
Yeah.
So it was super fun.
Oh my gosh. Well, yeah. Is that something that you remember? So if you were doing it, were you doing it around even 10 years ago? Like that was something that your dad would.
Oh my God.
Like, is it just one of those long term, like, because that would definitely be true for me. Like my dad and me, just like inside jokes, like puns, pranks, all of that from childhood.
Okay. Two things that I want to follow up on. First of all, we have to talk about pranks in a minute because it's like a huge thing for me, as in I hate them.
I hate them too.
Yeah. But no,
I'm not even talking pranks where it's like a bucket of water falls on your head. I'm just talking about like, why did you have to make me look and feel stupid just to the two of us? Yes. But like, still, Dad,
yeah,
still.
Come on.
Yeah.
No, we have very, like, my dad was like so extremely goofy, and it might have been a surprise to anyone that knew him in his like professional life. Mm. But at home with the family, he was so funny and would like, it sounds insane to talk about some of the like weird like stuff you do at home, you know, but he would like paint a face on his big toe and lay on the couch and like talk with his toe.
Oh, that's amazing.
It's just like so goofy. Yeah. So like,
please. Also, that's like, he'd be a millionaire on TikTok at this point.
It's true. Oh my God. If TikTok had been around, then I would have made him a meme like 100 times over.
Yeah.
He was the best. And we actually, on this trip, it was very interesting to have my brother's fiance with us, because it makes you realize all these shorthand things. Absolutely. That you say. One of them is, I don't know if you remember this commercial. This is the weirdest stuff to talk
I'm
about.
I'm so excited. This is my jam all day long.
There was a commercial, and this was in maybe 2000 and maybe 2000 and 2001. There was a commercial with two flies or mosquitoes.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, it was for the Travel Channel or something like that. It was like, buzz, buzz, I love to travel. That, and like, I don't remember what it was for. I don't remember anything else that happens in that commercial. I think one of them gets swatted by a giant, dumb-looking hand. Uh-huh. But buzz, buzz, I love to travel. It's like, and then
that embedded itself in your kind of lexicon as a family.
We all say it to each other. And then I knocked on my brother and his fiance's hotel door once, and was like, "Who is it?" Expecting my brother to be like Landshark. Because that's what
sure.
And then Mina was like, "Oh, it's me," or whatever. And I was like, "Oh, that's not the right answer."
Like, you're like, time. Here's the handbook.
It's time. Here's the handbook to join the family. Dumb things.
Which, by the way, I mean, that's the sort of like in the movie version of this, you know, there is that moment of like, oh, I'm an outsider as the fiance of not knowing stuff. But then the transition of becoming part of those jokes.
Yes.
That they exist at all allows for like, oh my gosh, I'm inside this wonderful world now.
Yeah.
So it's sort of like, it's worth feeling a little out of touch at the beginning, because then when you're in on it, you feel like you really belong.
It's so special.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was fun to travel like that with her, to come up with new things and like all that stuff. So it was like, yeah, I think those secret languages and language of friendship, it's really interesting to me.
Oh, absolutely. Oh my God. Yeah. That reminds me that my friend, and we got to go get back to pranks, which actually I've got a good segue for the same friend.
Okay,
I think I've told the story before. I'll make it very brief, because honestly, it's like, don't drag it out, Janet. It's not that interesting. But my friend Tina, when she got married, she wanted me to say something at the dinner or whatever. And I got up there and I had not prepared anything, because somehow in my mind, I mean, it's the biggest cliche in the world where I'm like, I can speak in front of people. Like,
right.
I'll just speak from the heart. It's fine.
Right.
And then I stood up and it was like, I had never spoken in front of people before. I was so tongue-tied. And then all that came out was just a bunch of weird inside references and jokes that had no connection to each other. I was just like, remember this? What about this? And then remember this? And everyone was just like, had like a indulging smile,
right.
Had no idea what I was doing. And she was crying with laughter. So it was worth it.
That's amazing.
But it was definitely like I sat back down and like all my friends from school, from high school, looked at me and even they didn't know what these inside jokes were. And I was like, you had to be there. Anyway, that was how long was I doing that? I blacked out. What's going on? But she was just such, she's actually done the podcast as well. And she's somebody who is like, you know, one of those just beautiful rays of light who then spent the entirety of her 20s battling mental illness with just sort of like getting the wrong diagnoses, so the wrong medication, all this kind of stuff. And so she'd been to some pretty dark places. But when we were in high school, somehow I convinced her that Jim Varney, aka Ernest, who's like, know what I mean, Vern, like all those movies, was my uncle, which was like a thing I didn't really care about, but people asked me all the time. So eventually I started saying that he was.
Yeah.
And she had known previous that he wasn't. But then she was with me at some point when I said someone was like, is Jim Varney your uncle? And I was like, yeah, he is. And she goes, no, he's not. And I was like, actually, this is super weird, but like, he is.
Oh my God.
Like, we've been keeping it on the DL because it's just weird. And when I get asked, I'm going to have to tell a bunch of stories. But I was like, Tina, he actually is.
Oh my God.
Was like, no, I'm not buying it. And then for the course of the school year, I would just drop little, every once in a while, I'd be like, and then my dad and my uncle Jim went, da da da. And she'd be like, wait, no. Janet?
Oh my God.
And then finally she called me on my bluff and she was like, let me see pictures. And I just was like, I'm going to carry this through. I don't know. We'll find out when she doesn't believe me anymore. And I went through and found some old photo albums of my dad and just found like a grainy enough just picture that friends. I was like, there they are. And she was like, oh, he is your uncle. And the second she believed it, I felt like garbage. Like, I couldn't tell her I was lying fast enough. I was like, no, no, it's not real. It's not real. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
That is amazing.
That's how I feel about pranks. As soon as I've perpetrated one, I feel like the worst person in the world.
I would have done the exact same thing. I would have enjoyed the like, blah, blah, blah. And they're like, the whole just giving each other shit and being like, no, Janet's lying is like funny to
me. Yeah.
And then as soon as you just, someone that you love and admire and respect that you've made them look like a fool, I can't abide it.
Yeah.
So I hate pranks. I hate magic.
Okay.
Can't like any of that stuff that's predicated on me looking like a fool and enjoying it. It's such a shock to me when people are like, oh yeah, it's just like, wow, how did you do it? And I was like, yeah, motherfucker, how'd you do that? Like, slow it down.
So you're one of those people who gets angry.
Very angry.
I feel like I go kind of back and forth.
Yeah.
But I agree that in general, well, not to keep throwing out this American Life references, but there was a great episode on magic because I guess Ira Glass was a child
magic?
Magician. Yeah. Like to the point where
that
a 13-year-old.
That is the least surprising thing
I know,
I've
right?
ever learned about.
Seriously. And he was like a 13-year-old and would go and hire himself out to like younger children's birthday parties.
Wow.
And he's like, you know, I'm just finally realizing only now that like they weren't hiring me because I was good. They were hiring me because it was cute and funny and silly that I was a magician, which made me very happy because I was like, that table's turn.
Yes.
Like you liked being in control of a situation that other people didn't understand. And you were the one that other people were like, well, you know, he really cares about his magic. So let's go ahead. I was like, yeah, that's layers, baby.
Oh my God. I love that. That's hysterical.
So you never had an interest in being on the other side and being like, oh, let me learn these magic tricks.
No, I don't enjoy people being fooled, and I don't enjoy fooling people. Yeah. I never liked what was that Ashton show or whatever. None of those.
All the punks and stuff. I know they're so hard to watch.
I did
a pilot for one once.
You did?
Because you say yes to everything.
Tell me about it.
It was I think it was BBC based, but it was the same thing. Like I did I had to do some sort of thing, and
okay,
I was
I wonder,
what am I doing? Like, please don't let this get picked up because I'm gonna be. This is the opposite of who I am in every way.
A friend of mine also did a pilot for one, and I wonder if maybe it's the same one. I don't want to like speak out of turn. It's not my story, but basically it involved like a cheap apartment in a really expensive city, and being like, JK, it was never really for sale. And he said people would just sob.
Oh, that definitely wasn't what I did. But
there's nothing funny about that, right? They were just like, what? So I actually can't live in this. You know what I mean? Like, so I do have to move home or whatever. It was like nothing about it was like entertaining.
I'm sorry. I don't know if these are very wonderful directional mics, but clearly Jasper's in the other room trying to engage Whitley.
I love it.
He's just desperately barking at her, hoping that she will at some point become interested enough.
Care.
And I thought Brandon would be home by now, but he's not yet. So if I either stop and go out there and just tell him to shut up, or we just like let him wear himself out, because that's probably what'll happen.
Jasper's not bugging me. So
he's definitely, he's so hopeful. I can hear the hope in his bark is like, how, and he has to really figure out how hard do I push it? How aggressive do I get?
Right.
Before now she's mad. So right. She really won't play with me.
Right.
So you really have to walk a very fine line.
Oh my gosh.
Very fine line.
My other friend just got a new little puppy, and like watching the very spoiled older puppy like deal with it is fascinating.
It's really, I mean, the only reason we ended up keeping him is because she loves playing with him. Mm-hmm. And I can almost hear her making, she doesn't make any noises, but now she started making sounds. I think she's trying to mimic him because she's not a barker at all.
Interesting.
So every once in a while, you'll hear a really high yip on top of his like, play with me, play with me, play with me. And then she'll be like, no, no. It's ridiculous.
That's so funny.
Nope, still into it. Jasper! I guarantee you that does not work at all. So where do you think that came from? Like, were you bullied? Was there ever a time when it was like profoundly real enough that it became like, I don't like this, or just from the get-go, you remember it?
I moved around a bunch as a kid. Mm-hmm. Did you move around a bunch, or were
no,
you?
No, I was set in stone in Tucson.
Oh, that's right. You're from Tucson. I lived in Tucson for 18 months.
Oh, wow.
Where my brother was born.
Oh, wow.
And like the weirdest stories. So, I mean, Tucson's kind of a wild place, especially back in the day. It was like just desert. But I moved around a bunch and...
just a body.
There's just a butt.
There's just a butt pressed up against the door.
I love it.
Oh, good. Okay.
Yay.
How old were you when he was born?
I was 4 and a half.
Okay, so you really do have some memories of Tucson as a kid.
I do. Yeah. I like very vivid. And it was like the first time moving right like that, so it's like all kind of like very intense. But I moved around a bunch. I've never lived anywhere longer than 6 years. And when you move in first grade and then in sixth grade, actually seventh, it's like nothing is funny.
It's just long enough to attach. It's not like it's if you're not an army brat who's moving every year.
Yeah. No, I had best friends.
It's just hard enough.
It was like so hard. And then moving in seventh grade with like glasses, braces, and big boobs, I was like a disaster.
No.
So I just don't think that a lot was that funny to me, especially goofy, like, I'm going to show you I love you by humiliating you.
Fair.
Couldn't have been less interested in that.
Yeah.
And then I remember, this is an interesting thing I think about a lot, because in 10th grade, this guy, I had a kind of a crush on this dude. I was in fourth period with him, math class, and at some and I apparently he had a crush on me too, because at some point I went to go sit down, and he pulled the chair out from under me, so you just fall flat on your butt. And I was like, looking back, especially and even in the moment, I was like, that is, you know, we are way too old. I was like, this is a little guy like pulling a girl's hair or whatever that bullshit is.
Right.
But the 10th grade version of it, literally never made eye contact with him for the rest of like both of our lives. So it's like absolutely not. Nothing about that is funny.
Did he apologize?
Yeah, he did, because immediately I was like about to cry.
Yeah.
Right? It was like not funny. The rest of the room was like, what the fuck? You know, it was so bad. So I think back to that, and also just like to me that way of communicating sucks. Like, I don't like it at all.
Wait, do you honestly feel that you've never actually forgiven this guy?
Oh, if I saw him now, I'd be like, hey,
dickhead.
Remember when you did that thing?
Yeah.
I hate you.
That's how I feel about Chip Caldwell. Chip, I've given you a shout out before. It's been a minute. Did put ants down my pants in first grade. They did bite my butt.
Mm.
And I kind of still carry that with me, even though he's like an archaeologist now.
He's an archaeologist. That's very sweet. Also,
he's staying true to the ground that he loved so much when he was picking up those ants.
There's a theme. If you didn't want to be hated, you shouldn't be named Chip.
Well,
I mean, that's all I got to say.
I got it. Okay, we're going to take a break. I will be back after a word from our wonderful buddies at Maximum Fun. We are so thrilled at your interest in attending Hieronymus Wiggenstaff's School for Heroism and Villainy. Wiggenstaff's beautiful campus boasts state-of-the-art facilities and instructors with real-world experience. We are also proud to say that our alumni have gone on to be professional heroes and villains in the most renowned kingdoms in the world. But of course, you are not applying to the main school, are you? You're applying for our sidekick and henchperson annex. You will still benefit from the school's amazing campus, and you'll have a lifetime of steady employment. Of course, there's no guarantee how long that lifetime will be.
Join the McElroys as they return to Dungeons & Dragons with The Adventure Zone Graduation. Every other Thursday on Maximum Fun or wherever podcasts are found.
Are you in touch with other people that you went to that school? Did you move again after 10th grade? Did you stop or were you elsewhere? Or was that kind of when you finished?
From 7th to 12th grade, it was all in San Jose.
Gotcha.
And then I went to college.
Yeah.
And then I went to college in Seattle. And after that, I moved to DC for early professional life. And then LA.
Well, certainly you knew how to move.
Yeah.
You could see that going either way. Either you would be like, oh, I'm staying in San Jose. God damn it. Yeah. Or you would go, well, I know what it feels like to start someplace new, and this is an opportunity to do it on my own terms.
Yes. Yeah, it was really like, and actually the move to LA was, I moved from Seattle to, all of my family's in Seattle, so moving there for college felt like, it was like, okay, we're away from home, but we're also like in grandma's backyard, basically.
Yeah.
Then I moved with my then boyfriend to DC, and we got married, and then when we got divorced, I was, for the very first time my whole life, like, oh, I can choose where to live.
Yeah.
It was so amazing. And for having moved as much as I have in my life, the fact that I'd never had any agency over that decision, because even college, you have to like go where you get in.
Fair, yeah. Where did you go to the UW?
Or UW, yeah. And so moving to LA was like, I did this road trip to test out cities that I thought were interesting, but I think LA was always like...
What were the other cities?
Austin.
Great.
I was very, very serious about the potential of moving to Austin, but it's really hot.
Girl, I was about to say that.
Yeah.
It's like, I can't, even LA is too hot for me. So Austin is definitely too hot.
Yeah.
Yeah. So okay. Austin.
I liked Asheville, North Carolina. Oh, yeah.
I've never been. I gotta go.
It's super fun.
Humid.
Humid. I know. Go in the right time of year, but frankly, everything, I mean, from DC, I love New York. I love visiting it, but it's just not the place for me. And Seattle, I was like, no, I had seasonal depression in college. Like, that's not getting better.
Mm.
So really, LA was kind of the only city that I was serious about.
Yeah.
And obviously, I came here and stayed in Silver Lake for 10 days on that trip and was just like, we're in.
Yeah.
Like, this is it.
So. No San Francisco.
No.
Just because sometimes that is one that people pass through or think to themselves, like, maybe this would be it.
Since I went to high school in San Jose, I was kind of explored it. And I'm not a big fan of San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
Tech stuff.
Oh, yeah, well.
Bugs the hell out of me.
I know,
and it's
true.
Happening to Seattle now.
Yeah.
It's
definitely a different, like, the relationship I have to San Francisco that is one of love is so about, like, things that remain unchanged through the first dot-com boom and collapse and then where things are now. It's like, well, you know, the cypress trees on the cliffs, like, it's not, you know, but, you know, when the Presidio was just empty, I mean, that's like, it needed to be used for something. But when you're 20 and you can just wander through a place that feels like it's just full of ghosts in a great way, and like, knowing that my grandfather had lived there, you know what I mean? It was just one of those, like, this is my special place because no one's ever here. And now it's like a bustling metropolis in and of itself, the Presidio.
It's sad. It's very, and that's another thing that's interesting about getting older is like, starting to have a lot more sympathy for nostalgia, and like, a, you know, sometimes nostalgia is very toxic and we have to be worried about it, but this like memory of how places were, I don't know, it's very interesting to kind of start to be like, oh no, I remember places, like my life experience is now adding up. I have years to be like, listen to me, kids, I'm telling you.
right. No, that's a thing.
Yeah.
That's a thing. And there are there are sort of things where I talk all the time about, like, somehow now I feel I've moved into this different way of relating to this one thing that, you know, I couldn't tell you when that happened, but all of a sudden it's there.
Yeah.
This is a complete and utter non sequitur, but thoughts on the Winchester Mystery House?
Oh my God. I love that. First of all, I love ghosts and all supernaturally type of things. So yes, there was a really wonderful episode of 99% Invisible about this house.
And there was a Criminal episode too. Episode of Criminal. Yeah.
Okay.
I've
toured it too.
Well, what's weird is I barely remember. It's so small and so tight, and you're in a big group.
Yeah.
You sort of get a sense of what it looks like on the outside, but it's in the middle of everything.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a weird, like, there's an empty space kind of where I feel like the fun part should be. I'm like, I remember something about like a fireplace, and that's where she did seances, and that's really all I remember.
I do think it's like the fact that it's like huge tour groups, and that it's really I don't think that they like, I would love to go and have like, if your company rented it out for a night or something, right? That would be the way to be like, let's really go like open drawers and like knock on things and get freaked out.
Yeah.
Or like see, you know, turn off all the lights or something. But it's, but just walking, I mean, I saw it in the middle of the day and just some like 20-year-old intern was like, here's where the stairs go nowhere. Like, thanks, Brent. You know, it was just not that engaging.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's what I think people don't understand. It's like right by the mall. It's not very.
I know you really want to be like, and then you go out to a curvy lane and then you can't, all of a sudden there's a house in a grove of trees.
Yeah.
Not at all.
And you know this more than anyone. I'm like, well, I've seen creepier houses in San Francisco that are 100%. Just like people still living there.
100%. I mean, they don't have bats carved right into their.
Not yet.
Oh, Stephen King.
I know. He's
really I almost would have thought it was the opposite because he presents, it sort of seems like he's always wanted people to understand him as like just a guy. That I could have imagined it being like a log cabin that you're like, I would expect that to be bigger. You're Stephen King, or I guess it is kind of not maybe as big as people expect, or is it big?
It's pretty big. Mm-hmm, it's also big in the way that like, you know, when you live in LA and San Francisco, everything is like, wow, my God, you have room for that?
Right, right. True.
But remember, did you read On Writing, his book?
No.
Honestly, I didn't like it that much. So
okay, great.
Everyone always recommends it. Read it if you want to. But he talks in there about like when he first got hella money and became like coke-addled Cujo writing Stephen King, like the decade he doesn't remember.
Right.
He had this massive desk. I mean, he talks about it almost like it's like the Oval Office level desk.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
This crazy gilded whatever. So I think he's kind of like secretly like house freaky.
Interesting.
Got a bunch of stuff going
on. Well, he was so excited to be in the movies too. If he has that imagination, then maybe you do want to sort of create, I mean, like world building is, I get that. Like, I want to go to a place like that. I don't want to live in a place like that, but you're damn certain I'm going to be like, I'm sorry, you have a library where?
Yeah.
Like, please tell me that there's an iron spiral staircase that's horribly unsafe and like a hidden passageway.
A friend of mine who's a writer who lives in Asheville is saving up money to renovate her house to put a secret bookcase.
I mean, this is what I'm talking about.
I was like,
I hate to say money well spent, but that is 1,000% how I feel.
Yes.
If this house had any element of that whatsoever, I would be into it. It is so not that kind of house, but it is a dream for sure.
Yes.
To like, and I think I even read about that. I was reading, this is many, many years ago, but I was somewhere that was not LA. And I was reading the local paper and there was a whole thing about this family that had built this house that had just like puzzles built in and like, just like a giant game basically. And I was so bitterly jealous. It sounds so great.
Like, screw you guys and your amazing house.
Yeah. That's, I'm sure it was an East Coast thing because I'm sure it was like an old,
It feels very, very that. I like that though. What I think you could do to this house to great effect is a widow's walk.
Oh, good idea.
I am desperate to have one. And whenever I own a house, I'm like, that's all I want.
Yeah.
Some way to get up onto the roof and stand there like a widow over like... Just give you an emo
wearing
vibe.
Something gauzy so people aren't sure if you're really there or
a
not.
A veil in the wind, you know, something.
Did you have experiences when you were younger that felt like something's going on here that I can't explain? Or did you always, like me, desperately hope that would happen to you and everyone else said something had to them and you're like, what's going on? I'm right here, like waving.
That one.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm with you. I'm like, no, I don't really get like hair standing up on the back of my neck.
Yeah.
I don't really like, and the other thing, this isn't unusual. It's like having such a zeitgeisty moment, but I'm really into cults too. And I think I'm that fascinated by it because it's just like, it would never happen for me. And like, that sounds like a brag or something. I'm not hating on people who do join cults, but I am such, it just would never.
After a certain point in your life, you either are susceptible to that kind of thing or you aren't.
Yeah, like I'm not a seeker like that.
Right.
I'm not built of the sort of beautiful, hopeful stuff that these people aren't too cynical.
Yeah.
But I am, so that makes me passionate about reading about them.
Yeah.
Like looking at videos of Jim Jones and just being like, what is it?
You know,
like if we could figure it out.
I never feel like I see it. Like, especially when, I mean, I think other people have kind of talked about this in public too, but like the Rajneeshis or whatever, that you're like, I understand that you're not showing us much footage of him
at all.
But whatever you're seeing, you're like, I'm not, there's nothing.
Yeah, like him sitting in his Rolls Royces or whatever. And I was like, what's compelling about that?
Yeah.
Like, it's very strange.
Even this time they did show stuff of him kind of preaching, if you will, orating.
Yeah.
And again, it was like, I'm not seeing
it. And I just listened to this amazing 30 for 30, I think it was, podcast series about Bikram Bikram yoga.
I listened to that too.
So good.
I really want to smack him.
Yes. And that was the thing. I was like, you know, again, like this is completely, like I'm not, no shade to the people that got really into Bikram.
Yeah.
But then they played that audio from his class and I was like, that sounds deeply unpleasant. You know, he was like yelling at people and there's this, you know, there's something for everyone. But I was like, I don't think I would have stuck around.
No, I know I wouldn't have because I'd have never responded positively to, I'm not the person that someone yells at and I'm like, I'm going to show you, I'm going to be bigger and better.
Yeah.
I'm like, you've crushed my soul.
Yeah.
I think you're a poison person, but also, unfortunately it doesn't bounce off me just because I don't think you're a good person. It's still in there.
And like, it'd be one thing if he was like your football coach. But I was like, I'm here for yoga.
I know.
Excuse me.
Yoga. Talk about like inverting what you sort of think of as.
It's very strange.
Yeah.
Have you taken, this is going to be like, I absolutely cannot stop talking about this. So anyone who listens to me on the podcast, I apologize for my podcast has heard me talk about this a bunch. The Four Tendencies by Gretchen Rubin.
Talk. I'm sorry, but listen, my listeners, I don't know if I've talked about it much. So, because I think I've had one other person who's talked about this a little bit.
Okay.
Let's get into it.
I don't know if you're into this kind of thing or not, but if you are at all, like, I'm into astrology, I'm into all these sort of like, what's the word for it? Archetypal.
I'll dip into any of it.
Just interested, I'll dip right in.
Tools. That's what I always say on the podcast.
It's like,
if it's a tool that gets you to some closer part of yourself that you can work on or understand or forgive or anything like that, great.
No harm.
You know? Yeah.
Her thing is, it has the four tendencies. There's four types.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all about how you react to expectations.
Mm-hmm.
So just as a super brief overview, the four are, one is called upholder.
Uh-huh.
And it's people who meet outer expectations and inner expectations.
Okay. I don't think I've heard this.
Yeah.
I've heard the relatives, which is like, what are the ways in which people give and receive love?
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know, material, love languages. Yeah. Okay.
Which are so interesting too.
Yeah.
So upholder is external and internal expectations. Obliger is people who will meet external expectations but not internal expectations.
Interesting.
Then there's questioner, who will meet internal expectations but not external expectations.
Uh-huh.
And then there's the rebel, that meets neither internal nor external expectations. And it's all just about how you're motivated and how people talk to you. And most people are obligers. So most people will sacrifice so a need that they have, like working out, to do a chore for their friend or whatever.
Right.
But I took that quiz and I got rebel and it's super, it like really, I was like, it just unlocked. I was like, oh, this just makes sense that she was writing all about it. And I was like, oh, this is so making me feel, it was like the first time it's been presented to me in a way that wasn't shameful.
Like you were giving yourself permission to sort of accept those things.
Yeah, exactly.
So what about the qualities of the rebel? I mean, obviously I should take the quiz, but I
definitely do it later.
And now I wonder if I'm going to take, what if I take the quiz, like leaning towards what I want the answer to be? Maybe I shouldn't.
Well, that's what my mom did. LOL.
Yeah.
She took it with me and was like, I'm a rebel too. And I was like, oh, you're not that. And then she took it when I wasn't around and she was like, I'm an obliger. And I was like, the most obliger thing is getting rebel when you're sitting next to me. Like, that's so amazing. Crazy.
That's amazing.
It makes me sound mean, but
that's adorable.
The rebel thing, and this is why I'm curious, because it's similar to what we're talking about. Like, to me, when someone wants to, when someone's like, I have answers for you, Janet, I can solve it for you,
mm-hmm.
my reaction would be like, fuck you, you don't know anything about my issues or whatever. It's just the internal reaction is F you.
Doubt or cynicism,
and like,
or
you don't know me, I know better than you, and whatever, blah blah blah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, friends of mine that get all their news from Reddit, I'm like, well, who are these people, why are there strangers on there? I don't care
about
them.
Right
like immediately questioning, immediately like, no, prove yourself to me. Like, that's a lot of my internal stuff.
Yeah. So, but one could argue that you could look at this form of analysis, mm-hmm. and be like, this is bullshit. This whole rebel thing, like, what the fuck? Who is this woman? At some point something speaks to someone, I guess.
Yeah. And I lean towards questioner, which is just like, yeah, I'll do it if it makes sense. Mm-hmm. Like, if I understand why.
Mm-hmm.
Then I'm like, oh, okay. So like, that's, and like, so I trust trusted news sources, I blah, blah, blah. But like on book deadlines, oh my God, I blow past them. And also I don't care.
Yeah.
That, it doesn't make me feel that bad.
You know what, let's be honest. There's no way I'm getting Rebel Rebel. But also, and this kind of actually connects to the episode that came out today on my podcast, was with Kari Wahlgren. And the first part of the podcast, we ended up talking about how confusing it can be as a woman in this climate, which is not to say it's not true for different waves of feminism, but to be in the space where you could allow yourself to go crazy questioning how much of me wanting to please other people is indoctrinated and how much of it is part of my personality.
Yes.
And that I think is very, and I think it sounds to me, based on just a little we've talked about it, that you could have a different answer for which person you are depending on where you are in your life. Like I might have been a full on obliger 20 years ago, but now I would feel probably more like a questioner, you know? Again, I don't know, you know, the ins and outs, but just on the surface, you know, I do feel like I've given myself permission more to be like, fuck no.
Yeah.
Like, no, 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 no.
Yeah.
Or why? Wait, why?
Boundaries, you know? Not like just picking up what someone else is saying because that's what we're conditioned to do.
Yeah.
I think that's such an interesting conversation.
And how do men test versus women? Like, I'm very interested in our culture for, you know. And this is not like I'm not negging on guys. Like, we're all a product of this environment.
Yes. Yeah.
So what makes you wonder what, you know, what gets taken for granted?
That I am so curious about that. One of the things that's I'd be interested to hear, and I'm sure she has stats on that because she's a very organized person, Gretchen Rubin. But the nice thing about it is that it's so presented so matter-of-factly, and it's not, it's one of the only quizzes too that's not like, well, if in order to become an obliger, do this and this and this. It's like, no, you just are what you are,
right?
So don't worry about it.
Yeah.
And I really like responded to that about it. It's like, it doesn't have any shame connected to it. But I like what you're talking about. I think about this a lot too when, like, let's as an example talk about, like, I don't know if this happens to you, but when I'm in line places, people who don't respect personal bubbles are always dudes. Always standing too close to me in line at Gelson's. And I'm like, why? Why are you so close to me? And part of this like wave of feminism that we're in or that we're trying to figure out is I'm like, is the solution that we all just get more aggressive in lines, or is it, or should guys meet us where we're at? Like, and that's just an example for a broader trend. But I do find myself being like, I don't want to lean in. I don't want to be less polite or be more aggressive or necessary or apply for things I'm not qualified for. I don't know. I mean, like, there's some merit to that, but I'm also like, can dudes stop applying for jobs they're not qualified for?
Yeah. You know what's funny? Let me tell you this, because I have the same experience and it's almost always at Gelson's. So it's very funny that it's that. I was like thinking through other places I go grocery shopping and I'm like, it's weird. Something about the layout of Gelson's like creates a situation where you kind of just mush in, but there's no room to mush in.
Yeah.
But actually, my experience is the second you talked about no personal space, I did not go to men at all. Ooh. I went to like old ladies. I always feel like I'm like, hey, and then I turn to like reach to my thing and there's like a tiny old woman just right there that I'm like, I almost elbowed you in the face. Oh, like, oh no, what are you doing here? We're not shopping together. So I don't even feel like it happens with men. I feel like it happens with the old ladies.
That's amazing. Everyone needs the memo.
What if I was like, I need you to respect my personal space. Please don't harass me like this.
I would love that. like, I need to set up a boundary with you.
Oh my God. That. Or maybe that's what I happen to notice. Like, that's maybe I'm so accustomed to it happening, you know, in, with people I do expect that I don't even notice it anymore, but I do notice it when it's not what I expect, you know?
Yeah, that's true. I love that. Just like a little old woman disappearing.
Yeah. Well, let me, I want to come back to you and you're having to move with your glasses and your braces and your boobs.
Yeah.
And that's when you moved to San Jose.
Yes.
And so what was all the shuffling around happening for jobs?
Dad's job. He was like rising through the ranks. He was an accountant that rose through the ranks of one company, National Semiconductor. Mm-hmm. And then we were in Texas for my elementary school. And then, moved to Silicon Valley when the boom was happening. And he worked for nano chip companies or whatever. But he was a CFO. And he was really committed to, he was really ambitious, which is like, I'm very, very like my dad in a lot of ways. And that's another one. He was very ambitious. So he was like, we're the only family that moved. All the rest of my extended family is all still in Washington State.
Right.
But he was like, no, we got to go.
Let me ask you this. And I apologize if this is a delicate question, but so the difference, I wonder, because I don't experience it, but I wonder what the difference between moving, chasing a job that doesn't pay well, or being in the military or something like that, where there's this kind of great equalizer for the most part, where not only are you moving, but you also are poor and you also, you know what I mean? Like you don't have as many choices. I wonder, how was it coming in to an environment because your dad was doing better and he was making more money? So you would ostensibly perhaps move to like a nice enough neighborhood, a nice enough house, come into a school where maybe you, for your family, has about the same money that other families do. Obviously, I don't expect you to know this, but like, I guess I'm just saying, I wonder if that's easier, harder, the same.
Yeah, I think that's a really, really interesting point, because it isn't like, I think it's like two different narratives, right? Like if we moved around a bunch because my dad was a reporter and he was just really passionate and we were moving around but didn't have a ton of means, but he was chasing his dream, that would be such a different family dynamic to the one that we did have, which was, we're moving because dad is supporting us and for his job, you know, we need to do this. And it did mean a bigger house, and it did mean, you know, when I was 16, I got a car and stuff like that. Yeah. Like I was very privileged growing up. What it has ended up being looking back is like, yeah, my mom would have done a lot in her life if she had maybe been able to stay in one place. But since we moved around a bunch and there were no family members there to help her, none of the infrastructure you have when you stick around, friends and family, she really had to sacrifice a ton and had to do it because it was like, well, we're all grinning and bearing it to do this tough thing because of dad's job.
Right.
And so the older I get, the more I really appreciate how difficult that must have been for her.
Yeah.
And like, and then it makes me like, you know, I don't know if this is rebel or whatever it is, but I bristle so hard at anything that would approach being asked to be, I don't want
to like take a back seat to be my support.
Yeah.
Like behind the scenes or whatever.
It makes me really like, especially I was married to a guy in the military who was, he was great. We weren't right for each other, but for a minute I was going to basically replicate.
And that's exactly where I was going. I was going to say, what prompted the move to DC?
Yeah.
Were you together on the idea? Was it, you were sort of, and then you weren't following him, because that makes it sound like someone's like, get out of my life. And you're like, wait, hold on. My belt is stuck in your door of the car. Please let me in.
It's like you were there.
Yeah.
He got into med school, and it just so happened that, you know, I was in love with him and also that I wanted to be a reporter. So I was like, okay, DC, great.
Sure.
And we actually moved there the year that Obama became president. We went to the inauguration.
It was really what a climate. What a climate.
Super fun to be in DC then. So it was exciting and I was happy to do it. But then, you know, I had 6 years in DC, I was like, man, I'm really ready to get out of here. And then we just fell apart. And I was like, okay, I'm taking this leap.
Right.
All the way across the country. And it was really, it was exciting. But now, I mean, I've been basically single for like 5 years. And a lot of my hesitance to be in a relationship is like, can I trust myself to stay this committed to not falling into a gender role? Like, I wanted to take enough time to myself to make sure that I was like solid in what I was doing.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so do you still feel, you sort of still feel like you're kind of have a wariness about that?
Because
I feel like you're probably in the clear.
Thank you.
With the right person. The right person, if that's what you want.
I think,
you
know, what I intellectually feel is that anybody who fell in love with me now would never expect that. You know what I mean? Like,
they would be like, I fell in love with a woman who would not say like, what would you like to do? I'm behind you and I'll stop doing whatever I'm doing to make that happen.
Like, no one's getting me a bread machine for Christmas.
Right.
Like, it's just not happening. So I intellectually, I totally get that. But the little kid inside me that saw my mom be like frustrated at having to cook dinner and all that stuff is still very like, ugh.
Not for you to tell her story, but what did she love? Was there a thing that she kind of felt, or did she not even get a chance to kind of figure that out?
Well, she's really like, and luckily now I will say she is pursuing a ton of amazing stuff and traveling.
Well, also, you lost your dad when.
Yeah. She was not even, he was 50 when he passed away, so she was quite young, and then moved on and got a job and really remade her life in a very to her liking, to her amazing credit, right?
Yeah.
She really bounced back and is like, you know, one of my best friends, and it is amazing. And she then and now is like an artist. She loves cross stitching. She loves painting. She loves all that stuff. She loves to travel. She's a really curious person. She loves Pilates, like golfing. So she's doing a ton of stuff now. Yeah. And it's really kind of healing, I think, for me to have gotten divorced and for her to be creating this new life where she is just Julie and only Julie.
Yeah.
Is super, super cool. It's kind of a fun phase for us together.
Anything like that, I hold on so tightly, not because I hate everything else associated with aging. I don't, but I do find that I get so much out of people older than me who are discovering new things and who stay enthusiastic about stuff, because it does. It's just such a reminder that you can find out that you're this kind of person or this kind of person, you could develop into this thing.
Yeah.
That there's no one setting that boundary except you.
Yes.
And it doesn't always feel like that. So it's nice to really see somebody flourish.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't know if this happened to you. Do you went to college?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. When you were in college, every once in a while there was a person who was like 50 in a class.
I'll tell you what. I went to SF State, which is a commuter school.
Yeah.
So I would always have people in my class that were like, and now that we say this, they were almost always, if they were older, they were women.
Yeah.
There weren't a lot of like, oh, he's 50 and he's da-da-da. But there were definitely some like very cool, excited, like badass women who
curious,
were like, yeah.
Interested.
Yeah.
Like getting, like telling stories in class that we were all 20 years old being like, what?
Yeah.
It was like so cool.
Well, I think too, it's like if you're paying attention, even as a young person, there's only so much stuff that you can process that people are telling you you'll later experience. I mean, you can't, it's hard because as you age, you want to be able to say like, just remember.
Yes.
And I bump up against that all the time on this podcast because I'm still so in touch with that person in me who was like, I remember being told this, there was only so deep it could sink.
Yeah.
It's just not how you hope that it just gets in there and then it kind of comes back up when it is you and you're like, yeah, you know what? Maybe I've been waiting for this on some level.
Yeah.
But to have somebody like that in a classroom, I think is kind of a nice like talisman almost to remind you that what you're doing is interesting and is important and someone's actively seeking this knowledge rather than how we feel sometimes when we're in school when we're young, which is like, here I go, like toeing the line, you know, this is part of my, like my credits that I have to get for this, the general, you know, not even my, you know, whatever my major is. And so I like that. I like the idea of somebody who's like, oh girl, I'm here. Like I'm paying money out of my pocket because I'm fascinated in geology.
Yeah.
You know?
It's it's so interesting. I think about that a lot now too, about the, because also we are now like entering I'm going to turn 35 in June. Like I am now old enough to be like, I have things to say. I could give advice to people, you know, I've lived long enough to have some idea of what's going on. And I do, especially writing for young adults as I do, like patronizing is not going to get you anywhere. And that's going to make them do the opposite and all that stuff, as they should, you know, they should rebel and not listen to older people. But at the same time, you want to be like, I just want to plant a seed. Like, you're not going to feel this way forever, or you're, you know what I mean? Just be open to how much you're going to change. Life is long, like all that stuff. I'm like, how can I talk about this in a way that's just about not being so, at least when I look back to me being younger, I was so much more extreme about things. And we're seeing this now, right? Like young people, young men are the extremists. They're the ones who don't see an alternative, who can't see how long life is or the possibilities for them. And I'm like, what is the right message to convey that? Because it's just so hard to grasp.
Yeah. I know. Listen, we got to get into this MASH game soon. So I have a habit of bringing up really like intense topics that I'm then like, anyway, we're not going to talk about that. But now I have to say it because it's something I think about and have been thinking about, which is like, especially now, again, having come to some point where as a concept, it's not new to me. Of course I understood it conceptually. I thought I understood it like in my core, but somehow my understanding of like, oh my God, like we send young, principally, but young men and women, we send them away at an age where it doesn't, mortality does not mean the same thing.
Yeah.
And it's so wrong.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's taking advantage of a person who is not, you are not connected to what that means in any kind of way. Now, if you lose someone,
yeah,
you were connected to understanding mortality at 23 yeah. in a way that the vast majority of Americans are not.
Right.
You know, so that's, there are always going to be those exceptions.
Right.
But by and large, for those people who just like their grandparents, they had lots of grandparents, and that's about it.
Right.
It does not seem real on any level. And so, not just going and getting killed, which is one thing, but like the idea that you're going to be able to process post-traumatic stress.
What a mind fuck. Yeah. When they're not, you know, we know that brains are not done developing until you're 25. Like all these things are.
I mean, we're fucking with chemistry that it's not fair.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's just like for some reason, in the last couple of years, like, of course I was always a person who was, you know, a peacenik or whatever. Like, right, you know, right. My parents are that way. And, you know, my dad was like, he didn't get drafted because he was already studying to become a teacher and they needed more teachers than soldiers,
right.
You know, during the Vietnam War, at least when he was growing up and in college and stuff. But he was like, I had my friend in Canada where I was going to move. Like he was not going to fight.
Yeah.
And so I thought I understood it. And then for some reason, when my own understanding of my mortality shifted, mm-hmm. I became so much more empathetic and like deeply sad about that.
Yeah. I mean, that's, and it's interesting because I have this, because I was married to a guy in the Air Force. And so I was technically in the Air Force, which mm-hmm. is fascinating.
Like a weird thing to be like, yeah, I guess I could check that box. But.
Yeah. Like I was a dependent, but I was in the Air Force, but it did give me this, like, you know, it does become really real to you how, like, I have really complicated feelings about the military because I met amazing people there.
Sure.
And they're like, and they're, you know, I was a reporter and all this stuff. So when you're, I think we can all relate to having like strong beliefs, you know, and that's just like for a lot of them, a way to express how they feel about honor and duty. And, but I couldn't agree with you more. It's just like, we just can't, we also can't ask kids to declare a major at 18 years old. I'm like, what, you know what you want to do with the rest of your life? LOL. Like, we don't know anything.
Yeah.
So I think we put too much on kids in general.
Yeah. Not that I know what the answer to any of this is. I absolutely don't. No, so if someone's coming for a solution, unfortunately, I'm definitely not ready to give one.
Yeah, go over to This American Life.
Yeah. You know what? Let them handle that. I'll bring it up and I'll make a lot of noise about it and then I'll trail off and play MASH.
Off to you.
That's awful. Oh, it's time for a quick break. I will be back after a word from our friends at Maximum Fun.
You never know who you'll run into in Fairhaven, the city under the bubble.
Allison Becker, Eliza Skinner,
Keith Powell,
mucus-drenched imp monsters,
Rob Corddry,
Christelle Alonso, Judy Greer,
grotesquely possessive carnivorous plants,
Justin McElroy,
Travis McElroy,
Griffin McElroy,
terrifying malevolent sentient beards,
John Hodgman,
Paul F. Tompkins,
Lisa Loeb.
Bubble, the sci-fi comedy from MaximumFun.org. Just open your podcast app and search for Bubble.
So we'll use this MASH game as a way to kind of dip back into stuff that you loved when you were younger.
Perfect.
When you were having these transitional periods where you kind of didn't have those friendships that you could hold on to because you were moving to this new place, mm-hmm. were there things, were there books, was it movies for you, was it all of the above that you kind of leaned into, music to feel understood or feel like you had like a companion in a sense?
Oh man, it was definitely books. Like mm-hmm. I've always been obsessed with books, and also, and again, my mom was a huge reader, so we had a big connection with reading all the same stuff. But you saying that just reminds, like, music was definitely, especially for the move in when I was 12.
Yeah,
just memories of laying on the floor in my new bedroom, staring at the ceiling, listening to Bjork with these massive headphones, and just like for hours, just like staring at my Leonardo DiCaprio poster and being like, he's never gonna know who I am.
Oh,
it was like,
my God,
so
totally.
Vivid in my head.
Totally. Okay, this is perfect. Okay, so give me three musicians that even now, they can be people you love that you didn't know about then, but three musicians that can compose a soundtrack for your life.
Ooh, okay. I really like that. Well, I have to say Radiohead, which has been my favorite band since I was 13.
Great.
They do soundtracks too, and they're melancholy AF. But I love it.
Love it.
I'll say Sophian Stevens.
Oh, sure.
He also does. Maybe he could get back into more Chicago vibes.
Yeah, that's a great album.
Oh, so good.
Yeah.
I really got into recently Lord Huron.
Oh, sure.
I love that.
Yeah, they're great.
They're great.
They're really great.
They really put me in a mood. They're great writing music.
Couldn't agree more. I'm totally gonna actually listen to it because that's a band where it's not like so part of the conversations in my own head about what music I listen to that I'll forget about them for a minute. Yeah. And then I'll hear a song somewhere else and be like, what is wrong with me? Like, I'm mad at myself. Like, why haven't you been listening to Lord Huron? They're great.
They're so great. I know.
I just had that moment. Perfect.
Good.
Okay. Next one on the same track, three books that you can escape into and just be with those characters whenever you want.
Okay, there's so many good ones. I mean, I'll start with Lord of the Rings.
Great.
Even though it's not the most soothing world to be in. But
yeah, I know. But when you get those emotional connections to the characters.
And I'm a huge fan of really big books. Mm-hmm. So I'm talking the one where it's like they're all in the same. Yeah. And you're like, I could ostensibly never stop reading this book.
Yeah.
And let's see, to escape. I very rarely reread books, which is interesting. So I rarely have the impulse, but I'll say Harry Potter.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Come on.
Again, world building.
Yeah.
It's an extraordinary gift.
It is. And it was very sweet, you know, and the books just kind of get smarter and they feel more prescient.
Yeah.
She was really on to
tapped
something.
In. Yeah.
Gosh, what if I was like the Bible?
I would accept it. I would totally accept it.
I'm trying to think about a book that's like, I'm like, can I give myself a nicer time? Mm-hmm. Maybe Anne of Green Gables. Let's go to...
No one on this couch is going to have a problem with that.
Yeah. Prince Edward Island. Is that where they were?
Yes. I mean, I still have never been.
Oh, I want to go. Yeah.
I mean, listen, I've... talk about why have I not made that happen yet? That's just silly. Maybe it's because I kind of am like, I want to save it. Like, maybe I'll just know. When it's like, no, I'm going this year.
It's time for the Anne trip.
Yeah.
That would be a very...
Because otherwise, maybe I like having it to look forward to.
And also, I think there's the... In my dreams, it's like how you can dream about having a house in the middle of nowhere in Hawaii. And then you, at least for me, I know I'd get there and be like, well, this was fun. 5 minutes later, I'd be like, well, okay, I'm bored now.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'd be like, oh.
It's almost like Don't Meet Your Heroes. It's like, maybe I do just need this to be preserved as like a fantasy.
Yeah.
I think that totally makes sense.
Yeah. Oh, maybe I should have said a Stephen King book, huh?
No. Not necessarily. Not necessarily. Okay, let's do three. We'll do three places in the world, in the real world of ours, that you would like to have a getaway home, whatever that means to you.
Oh my God, okay. What a great thing to even imagine. New Zealand.
Great. Any particular North or South Island?
I was going to say, definitely somewhere in the South Island. I have a lake in mind.
Oh, okay.
And I don't remember now the name of the lake, but it's south in the South Island.
Yeah.
Oh my God, best
that's
place
spectacular.
In the world.
Spectacular.
Yeah.
Spectacular.
Have you been there?
Place.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's why you toured.
Although I have not gone south. I have not been on the south end of the South Island. Okay. I've only been on the sort of the northern or northern half of the south, and then I've been all over the north. And all over the beautiful, beautiful North Island where everyone apologizes that it's not the South Island.
Is that
I'm
funny?
Sorry, it's so ugly. You're like, what are you... You're standing, I'm standing behind a roaring waterfall and you're apologizing for it being ugly. This is extraordinary.
They're
what
like,
is happening?
Everything about New Zealand is just like warms my heart so
it's
much.
It's wonderful.
The
it's
and all
wonderful.
The sheep.
I know. I call them hill maggots. Now listen, hear me out. I have no issue with sheep. I love them so much. It's just when you see them all the time and you're driving and they're so far away that all you see is like a mass of wiggling dots on a hillside. I'm like, listen, I mean this in a positive, jokey way. They do look a little bit like maggots. So I'm going to call them hill maggots.
You know what?
I love sheep.
You're not wrong. You're not wrong. Okay, I have to tell you one of my greatest regrets in life. I went to New Zealand and for my honeymoon. So my then husband and I were in one of the camper vans, tooling around, having
great.
Like the best time. And we were driving on one long stretch of road. And you know, you get into the zone. You're just listening to music. You're kind of just like in spacing out. And we both looked at each other and we were like, did you just see... A single black sheep on top of a circular hay bale somehow on top had climbed up and gotten on top of us. And we were like, Yeah. You saw that too?
Yeah.
And we were both like, oh my God. And then we didn't stop and go back and take a picture of
yeah.
it. And I'm like, yeah. to this day, so sad.
It's such a, so a wonderfully simple regret.
Like, just stop and smell the roses, kids.
Yeah. No, you're not wrong. Which I, by the way, take very literally. I fully walk past any rose. I'm like, give me some smell. Yeah. Because so many of them don't have smiles anymore.
It's true. And in LA, though, I think we're lucky. Sometimes I just find myself on Instagram taking pictures of flowers. Because yeah. it smells like flowers in LA.
No, you're right. Especially like dusk in the summer when the jasmine's out.
Oh,
that's a real, Brandon and I call that the get a room smell because it's so sexy.
It's true.
It's sexy flower. Like, hey, everybody. You're like, get a room, jasmine. Yeah, what is like, happening?
Oh, I want white wine all of a sudden. What's
spritz
happening?
Spritz me. Okay, great. So New Zealand. I really derailed us. Sorry. New Zealand. Two more.
I'll do Paris.
Great.
Gosh, this is a tough one. I'm really taking this too seriously, but
there's no such thing.
You know, it's like, oh my gosh.
And there's editing. Julian can cut out any pause that he feels is too prolonged.
I'm acting like there's anything hanging on this, but I'll say maybe I'd love to have a getaway on like the Orcas Islands.
Oh, sure. Yeah. That's my dad's favorite place in the world.
Oh my gosh.
Loves the Orcas Islands. Okay.
The best.
Okay. Next category is let's do three skills that are, it's something that's kind of intimidating and or scary to you.
Okay.
That you could wake up with tomorrow and you're just an expert and you feel fearless about.
Wow. Okay. That's specific and I like it. I don't know why this came to mind first, but I feel like
I love the speaking from the gut.
Being able to read like really ancient texts.
Ooh.
Like great. Cyrillic, or is that one of them that I was just reading? I was watching this amazing documentary called Ancient Skies. It's kind of like, it's just about humans' relationship with the stars and what we've in navigation and astrology and astronomy and all that. It's fascinating. But, you know, there was some guy reading like Cyrillic. And I was like, he's got to be one of five people on Earth that can read these absolutely tiny little scratches and be like, this is what it means.
Yeah.
And that would be very cool.
I know the concept of being able to understand something at its most like concentrated and refined rather than it having to be interpreted through someone else's mind, through all these like years of culture and all that kind of stuff. I totally get that.
Translators are our superheroes.
Yeah.
That's really.
Yeah.
Another skill that isn't like it's like intimidating to me. That
yeah,
I want to like download.
I don't know why I'm I had to make it something that you're intimidated by.
No,
it really
I like
should.
That.
It doesn't necessarily have to be.
I like that. It's LOL. It's kind of magic, but I'm not. I don't want to engage. I'll like fire dancing.
Ooh,
would be pretty darn cool. I go to Burning Man, and a lot of people do it, and it is very intimidating. But it also seems like if you could really do that well, you'd.
Yeah.
Just be living.
Yeah. Be I feel fun. Like I'm so clumsy. Like, what would I have to overcome about my basic clumsiness to be able to do that?
I know. I'm like, I was not a dancer. I was a sports person.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So like a
there's a little more
that.
More margin for error. With
you're
like
supposed
exact...
to crash into people.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Okay, give me one more, whatever that means to you.
I would like to... Well, I really love to be... I'd really love to know how to build stuff. I'm trying to think about what particular kind of thing I'd really want to be able to build. I mean, like welding, like things like that are just like so cool to me.
Yeah.
I feel like I could have gone for harder skills. I don't think welding
I think these are great. These are great. Also, this is your MASH game. So you satisfy every part of whatever works for you. Okay. Next category. Let's get the romance out there. It's a MASH game. I don't care. Characters from books, movies, celebrities, people from history, cartoons, animals. It's all up for grabs.
Amazing.
Three.
Okay. That is not hard at all. Jeez.
Great.
let's see. Who have I been crushing on lately? Oh, God. You know, Poe Dameron, Oscar Isaac.
Oh, yeah.
The new Star Wars. I find him to be just, I think Oscar Isaac is, you know, some actors are so talented at being charming and making it seem like literally everyone around them is in love with them.
Yeah.
He and BB-8 were going to make out to me. It's like literally everyone you make eye contact is like swooning.
Yeah.
So
beautiful.
Of all the characters, I'll just go with that one because he's very roguish and handsome.
Perfect.
And then Trying to think if there's somebody from, I often read young adult books, so I can't really like throw out a teenage boy for this category.
But this isn't in like a timeless, ageless sort of era in a way that.
Okay, that's interesting. you know what? There was, I don't know if you've heard of this author, Naomi Novik. She is so brilliant, and she wrote a book called, one of her books is Spinning Silver, but the one I'm talking about is Uprooted. Uprooted.
Okay.
And in that book, there's like a wizard who is like lives up in a tower, and I just thought was very sexy. So I'll go for a roguish wizard.
Roguish wizard. Fantastic.
And then Seth Cohen from The OC.
Great. Great, great.
Ruler of my
great, great,
life.
Great. Fantastic. Okay. Next one. Let's do. I'm trying to think of categories that I've not ever invented before, but that really puts a lot of pressure on myself. What about like, okay, this is totally weird, and I don't know why I'm, again, this is for me now, it's a mash game for me too, where I'm like, I don't know why I thought of this, but like, what about three retreats that you don't know of existing, like, and it, you could place them at a certain place, like, yes, I would want to do this in Ojai, or it could just be like wherever, but what about a weekend that's devoted to something that you heretofore don't know of as existing, or just you yourself haven't had a chance to do?
Okay.
Like, I would love like a kayaking retreat. I've only kayaked twice.
Interesting.
But the idea of being like, because it's always the thing I think I'm going to do when I vacation somewhere and I never get around to it. It's like, or we could kayak. I'm like, that sounds great. Well, I do want to get something to eat first. And the next thing you know, like, I've left. So I would like something like that where I'm like, I never quite get there.
Yeah.
But if I knew that's all I was there to do, then like that, I would
then
do it.
Then you'd go to town.
Yeah.
That's so funny because I just harangued a family member for buying a kayak. So I was like, who kayaks?
I mean, I don't see myself buying a kayak anytime soon, I'll be honest with you. I'd be like, I'm going to go buy one. First, I need to get something to eat. And then I would just never buy it.
Yes. Oh my God, I love that. Wow, this is a really interesting, I love this prompt. Well, I'll start with one that exists but that I haven't done yet, which is a silent retreat.
Yeah.
I'd love to do that. I'm a chatterbox. I always have been. And having a silent period of time would be, I think, pretty revealing.
Yeah.
And
that's great.
I mean, where would it be fun to be silent? On a mountaintop somewhere.
Yeah.
Probably in New Zealand. Why not that?
Great.
Yeah, silent retreat on the mountaintop of New Zealand. That sounds great.
I'm about to say one of the most Los Angeles things I've ever said, which is that my acupuncturist is at a silent retreat right now.
Yes, I love that. you know who I heard about silent retreats from? My improv coach. So
oh, fantastic.
Don't worry.
Everything
about
holds
it.
Up. Everything is holding up fast and true in Los Angeles.
Let's see. Another one. I would, let's see. I don't know if this exists, but I'd like to go on like a reenactment retreat.
Oh my God, amazing.
Reenacting what? I'm not 100% sure. Maybe you go to Versailles and we're all reenacting the
That's
guillotine.
Wonderful.
Something like this. Then we do eat cake. Something that's crazy like that.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
Super fun.
The opulence without actually having to go back in time and like watch someone be beheaded.
Yeah, right? Yeah. It's like I am somewhat charmed by all these reenactments that happen in America. It feels very American. I'm sure they do it in other places too, but it's just something like, I love history, and so just getting to kind of play act with that would be super fun.
Yeah.
And then let's see. We're just going off the top of the
love
head
it.
Here. Let's go to a watchmaking retreat in Denmark.
Oh, please. I'm in. I am in. Anything where like you're around other people that are passionate about a thing that even you yourself are not. I feel like you and I are both curious people.
Yes.
So I can very easily, like I said this before, and this is like not a thing I'm proud of, but I had this like moment of like getting the hair on my neck raising when I was watching this documentary on HBO about Reagan years ago, because they said like, he just had, they were like, he's very charismatic. He was really a people person. Mm-hmm. The problem with that is that he would go in to meet with a group of people that had a very strong opinion about something. And he would walk out like convinced because he took on their wow. He understood and like empathized, which I grew up like with grandparents who loved Reagan and with parents who were like, he's the devil. So it was such a weird moment to be like, oh, I identify with that so deeply. Right. Like, I'm not saying I would sit down in a room with like Nazi sympathizers and be like, right. listen, this is, but when someone is engaging and passionate about something and it doesn't even have to be anything I know anything about, I'm like, this is my new favorite thing also.
Yep.
At like, least this for this
is
moment.
The most important thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Watchmen in Denmark. Great.
It's Love like it. that West Wing episode Wheel of Cheese when the people are like like pitching their wacko, like yes. objectively wacko ideas. But I'm like, I do want a highway for wolves.
Yes. Oh, that Wheel of Cheese episode.
Mm. It's a classic.
Gorgeous. Okay. The next episode of the Smash game is three foods as simple as, you know, the one thing you had this one time that you've never been able to find again, or Ooh. A category that in this reality, it's not going to be bad for you, even if it is. It's not going to be bad for the environment, even if in this world it is, et cetera.
Okay. I love that.
Zero ramifications to your body, health, the way you feel.
Okay, amazing. Number one, ramen. Great. With a bullet. Wish I could eat it literally every day.
Yeah.
I do eat it about, at this point, twice a week, and I'm feeling that. Uh-huh. Not great. I need to hold back on that. Then I'll say amazing French cheese boards.
Oh, great.
Mm-hmm. Just the big, massive ones you see on Instagram.
Yep, great.
And then... Oh, well, oh my gosh. This is so dorky. It keeps beef stroganoff.
Great.
I love beef stroganoff.
Well,
German Bavarian food.
You know, it's a creamy, noodly thing. So it fits. Food. I think it definitely fits within this theme that we're going with. Okay, great. And then final category for you. What about like a three people? They can be fictitious, they can be characters, they can be authors, they can be from any time in history, wide open, three people that you would love to have as a friend. Like, Ooh. They would always be, like, psyched to see you and you would have adventures together.
Ugh, oh my gosh, what a great question. Well, let's see.
I mean, it's so wide open. It's almost too wide open. I'm like, anyone from any time, real or imagined.
Being your BFF.
No presh.
And a lot of people that we know from history, we know because they were like not great. You know what I mean? Like, so part of me is like, well, if Amelia Earhart had lived, she'd probably be rad, right? And rad to hang out with. But she also seemed to be pretty obsessed. It doesn't necessarily mean a bad
Fair.
Thing. But
Fair.
Let's see.
But that's why I could also be a fictional character, so you don't have to, like, carry the weight of, like...
That's true, of history. But fictional... To be honest, fictional characters are almost harder for me because I don't... I think part of... And I'm
Well, really, you're a writer, so part of it is, like, the mechanics of creating and...
I'm curious if you feel this way for acting.
100%.
If, like, the fictional character has lost a lot of verve to me because I'm only looking at it like, oh, how can I make a character this well-drawn or whatever?
Yeah.
But I still do with movies. I'm like, acting is something I could never do. So I'm like, this is amazing. But I'll say like, how about, what's a good Tom Hanks character I want to hang out with? The guy from the Dan Brown thing. Let's hang out with Dan Brown.
Yeah. Yep. Definitely putting Dr. Dan Brown.
Ooh. And that reminds me also of, okay. Have you seen Jumanji, the new Jumanji with The Rock?
Yes. I either saw some, oh, you know what? Yeah, I did see it. I couldn't, for a second I was like, did I complete that movie? But yes, I did. Yeah.
The part where, and spoiler alert, I'm so sorry, audience. Mm-hmm. The part where Nick Jonas shows up and then his superpower is making margaritas.
Yeah.
I'm like that. I want to hang out with that guy in the jungle having margaritas. That's it.
I love that you're concerned about the spoiler levels of Jumanji.
Of the Nick Jonas storyline in Jumanji. I just want everyone to not be mad at me.
Appreciated. Amazing.
Turning into really like the funniest. How about what's like, Princess Zelda.
Great.
From the game.
Great.
Zelda. She probably has some stories.
Great. Okay. All right. I'm going to do my little squiggle. So tell me when to stop.
Okay. I hate when people tell you to stop too soon, so I'm going to let you go for a minute. Okay, stop.
Okay, great. I'm going to pause this. To the listener, it will seem as if no time has passed, and then I will come back with your 100% guaranteed MASH future.
Amazing.
Okay, all right. I feel very good about this.
Ooh.
Even though you did get a shack, but bear with me on this. It's somewhere in the Orcas Islands. Now, what are you going to do? Live in some ostentatious mansion?
Absolutely
not. Like, it's about where you are when you're there. It's not about, like, staying like, in, you know what I mean? It's like a cabin.
Totally.
And I think it should be called Mac. M-A-C-H, because I feel that a shack is a cabin.
I think that's Match. True. I'm sure that it's right on a bluff overlooking the ocean.
Yeah, it's going to be great. All right. And it has the littlest footprint on the environment to boot. There so everyone thanks you. Okay, next thing I want you to know, from your beautiful view of the water in your cabin on Orcas Island, you are indulging in just the most delicious cheese board. It's like, how did this get here?
What a dream.
Snap of your fingers. It appeared magically.
Ugh.
It's probably something that is so wonderful that when you start to go a little crazy on your Silent Mountain retreat in New Zealand, you'll start like having like almost like the pink elephants on parade visions. You're going to be like, oh, I remember. And like somehow in your vision, the cheese will become talking characters. You'll be like, at a certain point, I was talking to cheese.
I love this. Yeah,
you know, because it's like, all part of the process of getting in touch with that. And I think no one is going to capture those, like the whole sort of magical journey that you're going to be going on with this adventure and the silent retreat and all of that stuff. Who better to pin all of that down and capture it in music than Radiohead? Love I mean, it. If anybody can take care of that, it's going to be them.
That
it's going to be like
very appropriate,
very specific and
haunting.
Deep and haunting. And you're going to be like, I don't know how they did it, but they've absolutely captured it. I do want to congratulate you because it's come to my attention that you actually built the house that you have on Orcas Island.
Amazing.
Because you were a wonderful builder. So there you were, like, putting the entire thing together. You're welding.
That's why it's a shack.
The piece.
I got one room and I was like, we're good.
I don't need to go too crazy,
that
guys.
That's very right.
You know why? Because you, not only can you escape to this sort of humble place where it's all about the nature that you're in, but you can also dissolve into the world of Harry Potter whenever you want to.
Amazing.
Which there's magic and castles and wizardry. So that's where the real opulence lives.
Love it.
If you don't mind my saying so. That's how I see it. That's the kind of place that you're going to want to have a friend that you can really have adventures with, who can take care of themselves, who it can handle your independence. So to have for this buddy, the Tom Hanks version of Dan Brown... That just feels right.
God, I love
this. He's going to respect the culture of Harry Potter.
Oh, he's going to talk to you about history.
You probably solve some mysteries together. Yeah. And it's definitely not going to be a situation where he's like, oh, I don't know. But you also are very independent, so you're not going to be like, where are we going next? This is a good equal friendship of equals.
I'm loving
this. The only thing I'm worried about, to be honest with you, is that he is adorable and charming, and I'm concerned that he's going to try to take you away from Oscar Isaac.
Oh my God, what a dream.
So I hope all of that works out.
A couple of charm factories.
It's a good problem to have.
Competing for my heart, not a problem.
Yeah, good problem to have. Was that a good story?
Oh my God, I loved that.
Okay, good.
That was, you really took me there.
Sarah, as we knew this would be, let's be honest with ourselves, this was a wonderful delight.
I'm
so excited that I'll be seeing you to do your show.
Yes, everyone, check out First Draft with Sarah Ennie. Janet's going to be on there.
Yeah, it's check out so First Draft with Sarah, in case you missed that, do yourself a favor. Are you on the social medias where
I'm
people
everywhere.
Can track you down,
I'm
all that kind
all
of good
things.
Stuff? Okay. And is it just your name?
It's Sarah Ennie on Twitter and Instagram are my things. I'm sort of anti-Facebook right now, as I think we all should be. So don't look
for
me there.
I don't have a problem. Well, and also, doesn't Facebook own Instagram? So that's where it's feeling like a kind of a dark territory right now.
Let's hope that this, I'm like antitrust, break them up.
Yeah.
But.
There's a lot going on.
There's a lot.
There's just a lot going on in any given
now
day.
Now I'm doing the thing. I'm like, let's talk about antitrust and then drop it. Like,
yeah.
But then also people can check out First Draft with Sarah Ennie, where I talk to writers every week.
Wonderful.
And that's online everywhere too at First Draft Pod.
Beautiful. Folks, thanks for listening. You know I'm going to talk to you next time on the podcast. The show is recorded by me and edited by Julian Burrell. And as always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.